97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
At the beginning of the trip, I really didn't pay a lot of attention to the news, but I popped on Twitter every once in a while. And one of the things I saw first and foremost was Donald Trump with my friend Scott Jennings.
Michigan. We were flying in here today. And I said, look at these farms. I got to get a farm in Michigan because when you own as many libs as I do, you got to put a place to put them all. Thank you all very much.
And then he teased something as well. We're going to get to all that. He is a regular, of course, on this show and has been for a long time. He's become very tight with this administration. Jennings, welcome back. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing terrific, man. What a news day. It's incredible out here.
Well, it is a big news day, and it's hard for me to kind of, you know, catch up just because I just got back last night from this trip to Greece. But before we get to the news day today, can I take you back to, like, the weekend before when all of a sudden I finally emerged from a couple of days and I see that you're on stage with Trump in Michigan last week, and then there was an interesting message sent from the Oval Office or Air Force One as well.
Yeah, I traveled with the president to Michigan. We spent day 100 of his new administration together, and just to be honest with you, I'm working on a little project, and it'll be announced soon, and you'll be able to pre-order it soon. Hint, hint. But I'm grateful to the president. He gave me a lot of time, and I've enjoyed getting to know him more. I'd never met him, truthfully, until February of this year when I first met him in the Oval Office, and it's been an interesting few months.
So I think I know the hint, but we just can't officially say anything about what's coming.
Well, I haven't announced it anywhere yet, and I'm hoping that'll come in the next few days, and it'll be an amazing Christmas gift. You should buy 100 of them, actually.
I will actually do that. You absolutely count on the audience here in St. Louis. All right, so this is, and I texted you this from overseas too, Scott. As bad as the media coverage is here, you should see the international coverage of Trump. And I can't even imagine what it's like the last couple of days. But I've seen, because I watched some stuff on the airplane with you, once again, battling the team on CNN. I mean, there is nothing that they will give this guy credit for. And I'll give an example. So yesterday, and I don't want to pick on any of my friends, but I have lefty friends. And I was talking about the fact that he's, you know, rolling out this celebration for the Army's 250th anniversary, which I think is awesome, right? We're proud of our country. But the thing that everyone goes to, and a friend of mine said, well, yeah, he's doing it on his birthday. It's his fault that the same day is his birthday, but that's what they're focusing on.
Yes, it's his fault. He should not have had his birthday on that same day. He should have known better than to be born on that day. And, you know, the same people who were all too excited about Joe Biden spending $230 million on a Gaza aid pier that stayed up for 20 days, killed a guy and got 60 other people injured and delivered no aid, are now mad about us having a military parade in honor of our armed forces. It's just ridiculous. It's the most reflexive stupidity you can imagine. If he's for it, they have to be against it. And it's hurting their party because a lot of things he's for, like, I don't know, national pride, pride in our military, pride in our veterans, everyone is for, except when he's for it. Then you get these broken brain Democrats who oppose it.
So I'm hearing this, and I'm sure you are too. Everybody that's on the other side, I do have these Reardon Roundtable participants. They'll be on the show tomorrow as we kind of kick that back off again in my 3 o'clock hour. But it's like, look at the polling. People are peeling off. Nobody supports Trump. He's worse than any other president in 100 years at this point. What do you say to that?
I talked to President Trump's pollster this morning, actually, John McLaughlin, and we chatted about the polls. First of all, I think some of them have horribly skewed samples. The New York Times is probably the worst example of it. Number two, I think this is a continuation of a narrative that they want everyone to believe, that people who voted for Trump are regretting it. That, it, at least in the circles I run in and the people I talk to and by my observations, is in no way, shape, or form true.
Yeah,
I think Democrats who didn't vote for him are still mad. I think that's true. And I do think people are legitimately, you know, continuing to be concerned about the economy. That's always going to be the case for the American people, particularly coming off the disastrous 4 years we just had. But I don't know about you, Mark, but I mean, everybody I know is like, this is exactly what I voted for. And on top of that, they're willing to give the man a little latitude to run his program. He's been in office for a little over 100 days. And, you know, he's trying to run his program. The tariffs have produced the first trade deal today with Great Britain. That's a good thing. And the Congress needs to get on it and pass this man's tax cuts. But I think he's got a little more leash than some of these Democratic commentators want to give him credit for.
Well, I think so, too. And I'm glad to hear you say that. But, you know, it's just they just keep pounding and pounding and pounding. And then did you see Biden today on The View? Did you see any of that?
I did. And so he told The View that he wasn't surprised that Harris lost and that he would have won. So he wasn't surprised that a woman with a boat anchor tied around her ankles drowned, but the boat anchor would have floated if given the chance. Like, I mean, it was the dumbest. It was the dumbest thing. This man has been living in a delusional reality, obviously, now for months or years. And I watched him, and I've watched some of his public appearances. The same, just remember, every Democrat you see on your TV tonight or forever were telling you a year ago that this man was capable of serving for another 4 years. That was the most insane gaslighting I've ever lived through. And when we see him now, it's outrageous what they tried to tell us. Oh, he's fine. He'll be great for another 4 years. They knew the truth. They lied to you. Never forget it.
One of the things I saw you highlight, Scott, and this is really stunning, and I don't know, you know, because I'm just getting back into the swing of things. This whole thing about this $230 million Gaza pier, which is ridiculous. Oh. You want to talk about waste? I don't even know how much coverage that's gotten. It deserves, I think, a ton of coverage.
Well, it got no coverage, despite the fact, you know, the inspectors general in the United States government only get attention when they're doing something to Trump or Trump is doing something to them. The IG at the Pentagon puts out a report showing the damnable disaster that was this Gaza aid pier. But remember, let me take you back to the State of the Union 2024. They did this thing, this half-baked, half-cocked idea, all so that he could put a line in the State of the Union address that pandered to the terrorists and the people in the United States who support the terrorists. That's why they did it. $230 million, 60 soldiers plus injured, a guy died. And any of the aid, which was not much, that got delivered, most of it was stolen. This was his brilliant idea in the middle of the Israel-Hamas war. And remember, this was the adults being back in charge. This was the great foreign policy mastermind, Joe Biden. That was the best they could come up with. And it was a complete and utter failure because they did it for partisan political reasons. It's the same reason they pulled out of Afghanistan on September the 11th. They wanted to do it for PR reasons, not for strategic reasons. And they couldn't even get the PR right.
One of the things I did notice from afar, and this is timely because the new pope, as you know, was chosen, that the White House puts this image out of Trump, you know, looking like the pope. I didn't think that that was necessary. But then I also remembered that there are a lot of people that had no issue or they weren't, you know, chirping about the fact that the Olympics went on international television and mocked the Catholic faith. So what do you say about that?
The people who are mad about that image are the same people who are all too happy to call for unlimited abortions, same-sex marriage, you know, full trans boys and girls sports. And then they want to turn around and make you believe they have some care about the Catholic Church. They have some care about the Christian faith. Give me a friggin' break and stop with the faux outrage. Lighten up, for goodness sakes. I mean, honestly, it's an AI-generated image. It was funny. People are making AI-generated images of all kinds of things. And guess what? You're allowed to laugh a little bit. I know Donald Trump's the president, but you can still have a sense of humor.
So when you, I know you you sat down with President Trump. I don't know if you're allowed to talk about this. Did you also meet with Elon? Have you kind of developed a relationship with Elon at all?
Yes, I did meet with Elon. I did it last week and talked to him for my project that I'm working on. And look, I love Elon. And I think this Doge effort, I talked to Secretary Hegseth, actually, about this. He called the Doge effort a, quote, wonderful accelerant. And, so whatever they've accomplished in 100 days, what Hegseth was saying, and I think it's true, is that this has accelerated a conversation in Washington that is so overdue. Cutting wasteful spending, getting rid of duplicative crap. I talked to one cabinet secretary who said, you know, nobody's talking about this. Musk's IT guy showed up over here. And they fixed all of our IT, and so we inherited this backlog of constituent service requests that we couldn't even figure out because of the IT infrastructure. They showed up and fixed it. Now we're clearing the backlog. So I think they have accelerated a modernization of government and a long overdue conversation about the need to cut stupid spending. And for that, he'll always have my gratitude, and for giving up his time, his resources, his reputation, and his safety, he'll always have my gratitude. I think he's a great American, and these people who are after him and threatening him and bombing Tesla dealerships ought to be ashamed of themselves.
So am I seeing also that some of this is rearing its ugly head on the campuses of our elite universities again at Columbia, et cetera?
Yes, and they did arrest some people at Columbia, which is good. But, you know, it also goes to what Marco Rubio is doing at the State Department, revoking these student visas. of these, you know, a lot of these Ivy League, Columbia, they've got more foreign students than American students, number one. And a lot of these foreign students that come over on student visas, they don't have to be here. They're guests of the United States. They're coming here with hateful ideologies, anti-Semitic ideologies, anti-Western civilization leanings. And they come over here and they foment anti-American sentiment on campus. At the same time, they're chasing and terrorizing these Jewish kids on these campuses. They need to be dealt with harshly. They need to be sent home. They can hate the Jews. They should do it back in Syria or wherever you came from. They don't have to be here. And I think Rubio, as Secretary of State, has articulated this perfectly, and I'm glad they're aggressively moving on it. These Ivy League schools have failed on this.
So I want to mention something that I talked about a little earlier in the show, because when I left, and you and I think talked about this ridiculous op-ed that Larry David did with the, you know, comparing Bill Maher's trip to Mar-a-Lago to the Fuhrer. So I'm in Athens and, you know, reminded of this history where if you would kill a military member of the SS in Greece when they were in there, they would shoot 10 civilians for every one military death. And in Athens, they have a wall that's on the side of this apartment where they have kept the bullet holes from the slaughter that took place by the Nazis. So I wonder if Larry David or anybody that keeps calling Trump a Nazi, and basically, let's face it, you a Nazi, me a Nazi, anyone that disagrees with them, they don't really even ever think about that perspective.
No, they don't. Well, what they're doing is they're degrading the memory of people who are actual victims of the horrific Nazi regime. And it's thoughtless, it's flippant, it's historically stupid, and it's broken brain partisan stuff. I mean, Bill Maher has been a consistent Trump critic for three decades. And he gets a dinner invitation from Donald Trump. He accepts it. And then he talks about it on his show. He is a cultural commentator. He's a comedian. He talks about things and people in public life. But this is what the left does, Mark. You get out of line and they come and try to silence you. I mean, the answer is always silence yourself or we'll do it for you. That's what Larry David is doing to Bill Maher. That's what people who are firebombing Tesla dealerships are doing to Elon. It's what his former staff is doing to John Fetterman in Pennsylvania. I mean, they're out here calling him crazy and a lunatic and everything, all because he supports Israel. If you get out of line, they come for you. Even Bill Maher, who's been a consistent liberal voice in this country for years. It's hateful. It's the stench of censorship on the edge of our politics. We have to reject it.
How about the other Maher? This is another thing I caught. Catherine Maher at NPR. She's still trying to insist that there's no bias there whatsoever in their coverage.
No. Well, insisting there's no bias. But, you know, I did a speaking engagement yesterday in Washington to a group, and this guy, you know, was haranguing me about the fact that Republicans want to cut funding to NPR. And I'm like, why should my tax dollars be paying for a news outlet that probably could stand on its own two feet if it felt like it, to have a very, very biased perspective on the news? And his answer, of course, was, well, it's to counter all the right-wing news. And I'm like, what right-wing news? I mean, the vast majority of news, you know, publicly funded or otherwise, is slanted, is biased. And that's why trust is falling in the news media. We don't need to pay for this out of our tax money. NPR can exist, and lots of news outlets exist without public funding. They don't need public funding to do what they do. They'll still have an audience. But they do. But that's the mindset of the left. I still need the government to fund this because it's moral. It's right. You know, we're on the right side of history. So it's a good tax expenditure for us to try to brainwash the American people. I hope they cut the funding in this budget. It's one of a million things they need to cut when the Congress gets around here.
You didn't make it to the Derby, did you?
I didn't go. I was traveling between, oh gosh, Florida and Georgia and else. I did watch it. It was an exciting race, and I did hit the exacta. I'll just say that.
I hit the trifecta, but it didn't pay very much. I love Sovereignty. That was the horse I was kind of all over. I did place some wagers from afar, but I was hoping for, you know, a bit more of a 30-1 shot maybe to come in second or third. And then let's close on something very positive, because I very specifically remember our conversation from a couple of weeks ago before I left for Greece on the Cardinals. I believe the quote was, "We suck," which was pretty accurate. What the hell's happened? They're 500, Jennings.
These Cardinals are having a banner day. They're winning. They're picking popes. The Cardinals are all over it today. The Cardinals are going crazy. I mean, we played some crappy teams. We did beat the Mets a little bit after we'd gotten swept in New York, so that was good. I'm glad. I love the pitching. I love the pluck. They haven't totally given up. I think the main baseball question I have today is whether the new pope is a Cubs fan or a White Sox fan. He is from Chicago.
I know.
Like, we need to know this before I can pass judgment on whether I think this is going to be a successful papacy or not.
Yep, very important question moving forward, and we will try to get the answer. Scott Jennings, thank you so much. I'm glad to be back on U.S. soil. You have no idea. If I never hear someone speak French or German for a while because I had French and German folks around, it will not be too soon, but I'm glad to be back in America. Thank you, Jennings.
Thanks, Mark. Catch me tonight on Abby, 10 o'clock Eastern, 9 Central. We'll be fighting it out.
All right, we'll see you then.
Thanks.
We do have, you know, somebody is pointing this out here to me this afternoon. We have new information, by the way, Sue, and conflicting information on whether the new Pope is a Cubs fan or a White Sox fan. These are important things for everyone to know. So I'm just being honest. This is developing this afternoon.
Is it really? That's
Wrigley
hilarious.
Field goes on their scoreboard outside of the stadium where it says Wrigley, that iconic red sign that says Wrigley Field, home of the Chicago Cubs. And then it says, hey, Chicago, he's a Cubs fan, right? Well, not so fast.
Uh-oh.
Because now there's information that his brother says, because remember Fred indicated the Pope is from the South Side, that his brother confirms that he is a White Sox fan, which, by the way, would be so much better if that's the
way
case.
Way better.
But again, conflicting information. Can you trust the legacy media? I do not know at this point.
Be like the cool kids, because all the cool kids, they seem to get it.
Get more at 971talk.com.